This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Wells Tech is live and on the air. My name is Martin Spriggs, and this is episode 416 for Tuesday, October 27th, 2015. We have a great cast of characters joining us, as usual. Sally Draper from New Ulm, Minnesota, dressed in periwinkle. Is that accurate?
Sure, that sounds great, Martin. Here I am broadcasting from New Ulm, and happy to be joined as well by Jason Schmidt, who is coming back for, I believe, his fifth season of podcasting on the Wells Tech podcast. Welcome back, Jason.
Hey, thanks. Has it really been that long? Oh, man. Time has just flown by. I would have you know, Martin, I am also wearing periwinkle, otherwise known as blue.
Close enough for a guy.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, we renewed you for another season. That's a lot longer than some shows on TV right now. So you should feel very honored. But we are actually very honored to have you on for another season.
I'm excited to be a part of it.
Good. So as we do when we have Gail or Jason on, we talk about educational technology, and we're going to try and do that again. Lots of different topics that we could have talked about, but one that I think is probably near and dear to every teacher's heart is classroom management, how to create an environment that is suitable for learning, for educating to go on. And lo and behold, there are some technologies that help do that, which is a really good use of technology. And Jason, you there in the Bennington Public School District, I'm assuming that this is a big deal for you and your teachers there as well, right?
And with any teacher, that whole idea of classroom management, you need to make sure that your kids are on task and that you're doing the things that you need to be able to do. And without a really good solid management plan in place, any teacher will be able to tell you, you're really quick to lose control when things aren't set up the way that you need them to. When we're kind of talking about, this topic, and as I was thinking about it and we were going through our planning and things like that, there are a couple of different ways that we approach this topic. So, it's only an hour long show. So, we'll do as much as we can.
Where do you start?
Where do you start? Exactly. So,
As you're talking and as I'm thinking about when I was in school, it seemed, and this could have just been my perspective sitting behind the desk rather than in front of the classroom, mm-hmm. It seemed like there was a lot more control, easier to control, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, 50 years ago than it is today. And I'm thinking that part of the challenge here is there's a lot more distractions, especially in one-to-one classrooms. You have that dimension, that component of a screen, something else other than a textbook, sitting there that has the ability to be a challenge for classroom management.
Yeah, that whole concept of attention, and we talk a lot about that too when I'm working with teachers in my district. How do you manage your students' attention? If they've got this device in their pocket, and how often do we see it? I spent the entire day in meetings and I just kind of look around the room every once in a while when you're with a bunch of adults and see how often they don't just kind of, do one of these things and, they're kind of, and then, kind of go back to, we have trouble with that even as adults.
What was that you were saying, Jason? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, you weren't paying attention? You got a text. So, this is something that's a challenge even for adults. So, when you put these devices in kids' hands and everything goes off all the time, so how do you manage those kinds of distractions. And, you know, ultimately what I tell my teachers anyways is that ultimately this is a classroom management issue as well. You know, whether you have technology in there or not, you know, when I was a kid, it was staring off into space and thinking about, I don't know, I think about sunshine and rainbows and lollipops, right? And, you know, it's raining in Omaha, but the sun's shining somewhere. So, you know, it's got to be out there somehow. And, you know, we're so connected, and we're so, you know, we have that
distracting
out.
Right?
Yeah. That, you know, there's so many distractions and things that, you know, really it just ultimately comes down to, teacher, how are you going to help manage your students' attention so that you're meeting the objectives that you want to meet. Mm-hmm. And that becomes a real challenge. And just like, you know, just like with regular classroom management, every teacher has a different level of tolerance and a different level of, you know, things that they're comfortable with. And, you know, we really just need to kind of explore that and figure that part of things out before going too crazy with any of these other things that we're going to be talking about in a little bit.
So basically, Jason, I think as we explored this a little bit in our pre-show planning, there was a big distinction between managing students who have devices available to them using a software solution, something to monitor and take control of their computers or devices, however you may need to, versus managing without or in addition to the software, just with physical behavior type management. So maybe that's a good place to start, is what if you don't have a software solution? How do you manage the kids in your classroom who have these devices available to them now?
Sure. Yeah. The biggest piece of advice that I give to my teachers, and really anybody who asks me about, you know, they come with me with classroom management challenges, and, you know, how do you do this thing, and, or, you know, how do you keep kids on task and everything. I say, you know, the first thing that I always tell them about is these great new apps. They're not really new. They've been out for about a year or longer. I haven't quite figured it out. But I call them Two Eyes and Two Feet. And this actually goes back to a blog post by a technology coordinator in Texas. The basic premise behind these is kind of tongue in cheek, you know, where the best way really to manage students' behavior with devices is to be present in the classroom and actually walk around and look at what they're doing, and set your classroom up in such a way that makes it easier for you to do. So, you know, a big piece of advice that I give to my teachers is, I say, you know, we're bring your own device, and, you know, we know that 95% of our students have their own personal, you know, they bring in a cell phone or something like that in the secondary. I just tell them, you know, have the kids put their phones on their desk and the screens down, and then you can see when they pick it up to look at it. You know, I mean, it's not that hard if you don't let, you know, and you know that these kids have these things. So, you know, put them on the desk, and then you know when they go off. Or, you know, if you've got kids with laptops, stand at the back of the classroom, or rearrange your classroom so that, you know, everybody, like, you know, they're arranged around the outside, and you teach from the middle, and then, you know, you can see things like that. So you can do a few things just to make sure that, you know, so you make sure that your kids know that you're watching, and then also that you're actually watching your kids, so you can, you know, see what they're doing and be able to address things as they come up like that.
So this isn't the hang out at your desk and hope that they behave themselves kind of modality. You got to get up and move a little.
You know, and in my experience, Sally, that didn't even work when kids didn't have devices. So, sure. You know, and here again, I, you know, a lot of classroom management, and something, you know, something that I've noticed anyways is when you add a technology component, it really just amplifies the characteristics of any teacher. So if you have a teacher that has good classroom management, and you give that teacher a whole bunch, you know, a classroom set of iPads, they're still going to be a good classroom manager. They're still going to be able to, you know, because they just kind of do those things automatically. And if they're really a poor classroom manager, then you'll also see the opposite effect, and kind of that how those devices just amplify what the teacher is like is really kind of interesting to see sometime.
So describe maybe, or maybe we can talk a little bit about the process of, a lot of our schools have Chromebooks, and a lot of them keep them, you know, in a rack someplace, and then they don't always have the Chromebooks in front of them. Maybe some tips or approaches that teachers could take about how that whole process works, getting them out, putting them away, you know, what kind of rules of the road might be helpful, and keeping kind of the distraction or the kind of the whole process of just getting the technology up and open and ready as little as possible so that you can get on with teaching.
Sure. You know, in a classroom situation where they're stored in the classroom, or even on a cart or something like that, where it's a shared resource, one of the things that we have found is really helpful is to number the devices, just put a little sticker on them or something like that, some way for them to be identified as the same one each time, and then have the kids use that same one each time. So then you have a little bit of accountability as far as, number one, they're not spending so much time figuring out, oh, I want this one because that's got the, you know, that one's got the pink sticker on it because I really like pink stickers today. And, you know, you just grab your number, okay, you go and you move back to your spot and help them get the things handed out pretty quickly. But then also, if there's ever any damage or anything like that, sure. You have a kind of not really a paper trail, but you know, okay, this student has been using it, so I know what questions to ask if I need to get something fixed. But and there again, it's just, you know, you would do the same thing with microscopes, or what's your procedure, what are your procedures for sharpening your pencil or using the bathroom or going to get a drink or any of those kinds of things. If you have those solid routines and once again, just good classroom management, there isn't really a best practice, as far as I know, for classroom management when you have technology in there. It's just, you're just following regular basic classroom management practices and
good common sense as well. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. My old principal called it rare sense.
Not always so common, is it?
Yeah.
All right, so maybe we should shift our discussion then to the concept of some monitoring software. I know there are a few kind of big players out in the market, things that would allow you to do things like see your student screens or project your screen or a tab you're viewing onto all your student computers, that kind of thing. Do you have recommendations along those lines, Jason?
If you're in a physical lab, we have a product called LandSchool. And that works really well for lab management. So not only does that allow you to view the screens that your students, that whatever it is that your students are doing, it's kind of laggy, and it's honestly not super, it's not super awesome for that. But what it does really well is, it's a really great way to get all of your students in your lab on the same page. So you can send a link out to them, or, if you're working with kindergartners and you have 26 kindergartners that you need to open up one particular website at the same time, and it's a big, huge, long thing that you've got to type in, there's no way they're going to type it in, and there's no way that you're going to have time to type it in, because you're going to lose one as soon as you do the next one. So this program works really well for that. It'll also, if you're, you know, if you're in a Mac or a Windows environment, you want to do file, you want to collect files and things like that from students, that's also a really good one. It is the version that we have in my district is a paid version, and I would show you guys what it looks like on the screen, but I just realized I'm at home, so there's no way that's going to work or do anything, be anything effective. So sorry about that. But then there's also a free version of it called LandSchool Lite. It doesn't have all of the same monitoring things. You know, LandSchool, you can do things like monitor keystrokes and save internet history, and it'll do screenshots, and you know, there's a ton of other stuff that you can do with that one that LandSchool Lite doesn't do. But for a lab management setting, LandSchool Lite is really great for those. I call them those thick clients, right? You know, if you're running Windows or Mac in a computer lab, that works really well. Then there are a couple other products that are out there, particularly for Chromebooks. The one that I have the most knowledge about is a product called GoGuardian. It does a bunch of different things. You can use it instructionally. It'll take screenshots. It'll show teachers what's going on each student's screens. You can do things like monitor time on task. You can take a look at different metrics for attention and things that they're doing. And you know, if you want them to go to a particular place at a particular time, well, you've got them. You can lock them into kind of where that is, and where you want them to be, and then it'll also do a few things where, like if you have asset recovery or things like that. So if something gets stolen, you can do some really neat things. Have it snap a picture of the person who turned it on and tried to log in, and give you the physical location and all those kinds of things. Do some asset recovery with it too. So
one thing I've noticed about these kind of tools, and the next one that you're going to mention, I think does the same thing, is even if the kids take the equipment home, it still does provide some of that monitoring. I noticed that looking at GoGuardian a little bit, it works at school or at home, as long as it probably works with the Google ID and the login, so that you've got some kind of control over the experience in both places, which is important.
Yeah, and particularly with the GoGuardian, I'm not 100% sure about Hapara. Because, like I said, I don't have any experience with it. But with GoGuardian, that's one of those tools that would allow you to, if you have certain restrictions on things that they can access with your internet access while they're on campus,
right?
That allows you to do off-campus filtering too. Which depending on the population that you're serving and the people that you're working with, that may or may not be something that's important to you, but GoGuardian is another solution for that.
Yeah, and I'm sure parents parents would appreciate some of that as well, the ability to know that the kids are coming home and that there doesn't you have to be 24/7, 365 oversight, over the experience. Good. And the other one you were going to mention was Hapara, which I don't have a lot of experience with either. My wife does, and that's what we're using at Peace. And you started using it this year, and they have, I don't know if there's a free version. I know they're paying a little bit for this, but they have been very impressed with it so far. There's a couple of different modules that you can buy that'll do different things, from assignment management all the way to what the kids are doing with their devices or machines as well. And I know they're using with Chromebooks. I don't know if it works on other platforms or not, but
yeah. And I would guess I'm pretty confident that most of these pricings are per device or per license. So I've heard of schools just adding it on if they're providing the Chromebooks, or if they have a technology fee or whatever. Maybe it's $2 per student for the licensing or something like that. They add it into their fee structure just to cover the cost of the licensing.
And I do know that with GoGuardian anyways, I don't know if Hapara does it too, but they'll, you know, they have GoGuardian has a really great referral program. So if you say, hey, this person's a GoGuardian customer and they gave me your contact information, you know, they do some work with discounted pricing. If you get a referral from somebody who's used it, and I think they do. I don't know if there's, Martin, you might be able to speak to this more than I would, but is there, you know, some sort of Wells pricing through Troxel or any of those companies?
Not that I'm aware of, although that sounds like a great thing to research with the number of our schools, you know, trying to deal with the same issue. So I think I'll put that on my Shop Wells to-do list and figure out what kind of things we can do.
We're just talking about how bored you were, so that's good.
Just for what it's worth, we probably could plug Wells Google Schools, a Google Plus community, where different folks using Google products are sharing information. And there was recently a discussion about pricing and referral links for GoGuardian. So if you're interested in that in particular and you aren't part of Wells Google Schools yet, I happen to know the administrator, and he'll let you in if you just ask. We'll include a link in the show notes, right, Jason?
Yeah, it's where all the cool kids are. So, you
know. Headed up by our friend Jason. So one other area I wanted to talk about in a little bit of a different path, but this classroom management with technology kind of opened up a lot of different boxes, and one of them was other ways to effectively organize and keep your students involved and engaging them, and just different software and tools and things that are available for those kind of efforts, you know, feedback, discipline, all those kind of things kind of digitized with different software solutions. And one that came up very quickly to the top of the list was ClassDojo. Jason, do you have experience with ClassDojo?
You know, I have a lot of teachers who use it, but mm-hmm. I personally don't have a whole lot of experience, just because it was one of those things that kind of came about after I was out of the classroom. I suppose I could try and use it with my teachers and just see, yeah. just see how that one goes. That might be kind of fun, and give them stickers and
explain the concept, guys, for those who aren't familiar with it. What does it do?
Well, I believe the idea is that you can give students feedback, encourage them or discipline them using computer or mobile device. They can see the feedback on their computers or mobile device, and the parents can also have access and be able to monitor. There's reporting that can come out of it, that kind of thing. So it's basically a discipline type tool, both positive and negative discipline, but digitized.
So kind of gamified a little bit, so they're getting kind of reward stickers they can aggregate, you know, get increase you know, a certain quantity of, or take away depending on what their behavior is.
I think there is some of that baked into it, and mm-hmm. certainly, just very encouraging. It says students love it, of course. That's what their website says. So maybe you want to dig a little bit. I'm sure they have some overview videos and testimonial type information out here, but
yeah, and the other neat thing that ClassDojo does is it really helps to facilitate the communication, that home and school connection. You know, beyond just the behavior stuff, there's also a messaging feature that's built into it. So, and that's in our district, anyways. That's one of those things that's
extends the classroom a little, probably especially for flipped classroom kinds of scenarios as well.
Sure. Yeah. Just to, you know, contact parents and do it in such a way that it's not it's within policy. We're not supposed to text parents or anything like that.
Okay. Yeah, that's something to consider.
That adds another tool to be able to do that kind of communication.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. I also headed over to my friend Pinterest and did a little searching on classroom management with technology, and lo and behold, it supplied a couple of interesting articles. This first one is called 5 Classroom Management Apps Every Teacher Needs to Know About, and they talk about ClassDojo on their list along with a few others. One that I thought was interesting is one called Too Noisy. It's a $2.99 app, and it's basically a noise meter for your classroom. They have photos out on their website of it up on smart boards and things, so the noise level is always kind of up in front of the kids. Maybe it's independent work time, and you can just turn this on your board up front, and they can tell if they're getting too noisy. I don't know if I can find one, but a picture that, you know, the little guy's holding his ears because things are turning up. He's frowning and not real happy. So I thought that was a neat thing, a noise meter for your classroom. One other one I wanted to mention real quick, again, from Pinterest searching, I found this article, Awesome Apps for Classroom Management, where they walk through different apps, and one that I thought was interesting, and I think we've talked about this one on the podcast before, Martin, was Remind at Remind.com, which is basically a texting app, if I'm not mistaken. Yep. So you can use it in your classroom. It's geared toward teachers and being able to have text messaging out to groups without having to individually send messages and things. So just a couple of things that I picked off those two articles, but if you're interested, check them out. They have lots more great links to share there.
Very nice. Good discussion, and I think a topic that will resonate with not just educators, people in the classrooms, but most of our pastors find themselves in teaching situations with catechism class and other kinds of settings. So this is kind of a universal topic that you want to, obviously you want to master this, and that the tools that are there should be in your tool belt if they make sense for your particular situation. So just kind of goes along with the whole teaching thing where you want to create that environment. So good stuff. Jason, really appreciate you sharing your experience here. It's good.
Yeah, of course.
All right. Shall we move along to our news in tech section?
We shall. And we were reading recently about a new product from YouTube. Interestingly, I guess they're maybe getting into a little bit more of a competitive effort with Netflix type content. They're offering now a $10 a month subscription service, and that's going to give you an ad-free YouTube experience as well as
experience, yeah.
Some premium content that they're creating just for the subscribed users. So just another communication/entertainment type channel that you have the option to subscribe to now. I can see things becoming very, very segmented as we pick and choose what our particular niche interests are, and perhaps YouTube's going to have the content that's worth subscribing to, as well as the ad-free experience.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a stretch for them. I'm not sure what their play is there. I have not been that impressed with kind of the YouTube stars that are out there, and I think that's where they're starting with PewDiePie and, you know, those kinds of things. You know, maybe I'm just too old, but whole ad-free thing.
You're not a 14-year-old girl.
That I'm not, and maybe that's good. But I think, I don't know about you guys, but I've really kind of grown a little bit weary with all the ads that are on YouTube these days. You know, pre-roll, middle, and I mean they're all over, and some of them you can't stop. Sometimes you can skip them after 5 seconds. Others you got to endure the 30 seconds, the 60 seconds, or whatever. So I think this is an effort to do that. $10 a month sounds a little steep, although what you do get, and they call it YouTube Red, you also get the music subscription service as well. So you get Google Play, which is a competitor to Apple Music and Spotify and all those. So it's kind of a package deal. So if you're actually a Google Play subscriber, Google Music subscriber, you will also get ad-free YouTube for your subscription. So in that sense, it's kind of nice because that's kind of the going price if you do that subscription music service, and you're going to get ad-free YouTube, which may make sense even for teachers too. If you play YouTube videos in the classroom to kind of get around those ads, might be worth the $10 a month.
Yep. It's kind of funny. Regarding the advertisements, you know, when we were young, we quoted advertisements. We all knew them, and we probably still, the three of us could probably sing some jingles from our past or whatever. Mm-hmm. My kids are that way about YouTube advertising. That's how much they watch, and they totally know the ads that are part of YouTube. So, yeah.
Their frame of reference. And back when we were kids, I sound like an older man now, but it seemed like you didn't have near as many commercials as you do nowadays either. So it was, you could count on maybe 30 seconds and then you're back to your cartoons or whatever, but not the case now. So we'll see how it goes. Kudos for trying this out. There may be ministry application here if possible, but good stuff. Let's move on to Wells now. What's new in Wells?
And this is actually Wells Tech now, because we wanted to take a moment and remind our listeners of the Wells Tech Photo Challenge. And
just a few days left.
Lots of new photos out there for October. Our challenge for October is Fall and Reformation. And if I can navigate my mind map, I just wanted to briefly do a shout out to our October contributors so far. We have Paul Stratman, Emil Burgess, Sally Hines, Cindy Krieger, Naomi Green, Christine Wolf, Bob Bullens, and Anona Boyd. And they've put together some gorgeous fall imagery for us. But we've got room for more, folks. Just 3 months in, we already have 241 images in our royalty-free image library, and we'd love to grow it. So it's still time to get in on that. There's fabulous prizes to be a part of, as we'll do drawings next summer at the end of our year-long challenge. And since this is the last show of the month, it's time to announce what our November challenge is going to be. I'm sure there are many out there who are eager to hear our November challenge, and we're going to focus in November on Thanksgiving food, and for the first time we're adding a verse image inspiration, Psalm 118:34, which is rejoice in the Lord always. So I encourage you to take advantage of it and make use of the photo library, as well as be a contributor. And all it takes is navigating over to wellstech.wells.net/photo challenge, and details about our prizes and things is there, as well as the actual form where you can upload your images and supply your information. If you want to have one of the fabulous, let me turn off screen sharing, orange Wells Tech screen cleaners. You want one of those, so we'll be happy to mail you one if you'll just share some of your lovely imagery with us.
Looking forward to those primped cornucopias and sweet potato pictures. So
everybody does food, don't they?
Smell them coming, yep. Yeah. All right. Is that it for Wells now, Ms. Draper?
That will do it for this week, yes, sir.
Okay, that means up next is our picks of the week. And Jason, you want to lead us off?
Oh, sure, why not? My pick of the week is something that you guys have talked about on the podcast before, or maybe mentioned just briefly in passing. I'm not completely sure. But this one is called Seesaw. So if you go to web.seesaw.me, not seesaw.com, that is something completely different. You'll come, and it's not anything bad, it's just not what we're looking for. What Seesaw is a web-based digital portfolio platform. What's really great about this is that it works cross-platform. They have an app for Android and iOS. And then it also works on the web with Chrome. And what this does is it allows your students to collect artifacts, and then they get sent to the teacher. The teacher goes through and approves things, and then they go into the students' portfolios. So that allows teachers then to kind of share with parents. Once again, that whole communication aspect of sharing with parents what their students are doing and the things that are going on in the classroom, really some great great things going on with this Seesaw app. One of the new exciting things that they just announced within the past week or so is they added to the iOS app. So if you're using it on an iPad, they've added a screen recording feature where you can draw on the screen, take a picture of something, and do kind of like what you do with like an Explain Everything or a Show Me app or something like that, and then it takes whatever video content your students have created and it uploads it to their portfolio, and then you as a teacher can give them a grade if you wanted to do that, and then pass that on and approve it and make it available in their portfolio. So one of the things that I always get asked when we talk about something like this is, you know, what's the cost on it, and the cost for this particular app is actually it doesn't cost anything. When you can use it for free with your as a teacher, you can set up as many classrooms as you want. You can have as many students as you want. There's no limit to that. Where they make their money is they charge parents for access beyond a year. So if parents want to, if you want to keep track of a student's portfolio for longer than a year, you need to purchase that access, whether that's as a school or as a parent. You always have the option to download an artifact or a video or anything if a student has done that. So if you want to have a copy of it and you don't want to pay for it, you don't have to. So it's a really a product, a really powerful product. Lots of really cool things that you can do with it. We're just kind of getting started with it in my district, so I'll try and have something to report later on. But you know, signing in with accounts is super easy. It ties to your Google account. There's really not a whole lot of difficulty in getting going with this. So, if you're looking for a portfolio platform, and if you're looking at digital portfolios for students, definitely 100% recommend Seesaw. It's a great app and a great platform for doing that.
Excellent. Sounds like
thanks,
a lot of
Jason.
Fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Sally, what is your pick of the week?
My turn. I better share my screen again. My pick of the week is an oldie but a goodie. It's something that I haven't done for a very long time, but this weekend we did a little traveling, and we also did a little geocaching, and I thought I would highlight the concept of geocaching for those that aren't familiar. And yes, there are some education ties to this, so bear with me and I'll get to that eventually. Geocaching, on their website, geocaching.com, is billed as the real-world treasure hunt that's happening right now all around you. And that's literally true. They say there are over 2.7 million active geocaches all around the world. And what you do is you sign up for an account, you search for a geocache in your area, and it gives you waypoint coordinates that you can plug into a GPS system and go find the hidden treasure. And once you do, you kind of log your visit, and it keeps up with it. We've actually been doing this as a family since 2006, although we haven't done it for a really long time until this weekend. But since 2006, we've actually found 223 geocaches in probably about 16 or 17 different states. It just turned out that this past weekend we visited North Dakota, and we had never been there. So I was reminded of geocaching, said we should actually find a geocache since it's a brand new state for us, and we did. We found the Hickory Dickory Dock geocache on the campus of the University of North Dakota. We even posted a photo, and so we're official out on geocaching.com. There's a picture of our family at the clock where we found the geocache, not really giving away any secrets of where it was hidden, but just, hey, we were here, and we took our picture while we were at it. The cool thing about it is, back in the day, we actually used a physical GPS. Now you can use your smartphone to do it, because your smartphone typically has that built-in GPS on the phone. So they have a free app, and then they have a pay-for app that's about $10 that you can get for iOS or Google Play. they have the Windows Phone version of the free app at this point, no Windows version of the pay-for app. But basically, with the app installed on my phone, I can just say, tell me where the geocaches are near my location. And it'll determine where I am, and it'll show me a map with geocaches on it. And so I was able to identify one on the campus, University of North Dakota, that we were visiting, and we went and found it. And it was pretty much just that easy. It'll kind of guide you to the general direction, and then you just got to be a good detective. And some of them are easy to find, and some of them are really hard to find. But it's kind of like a game, and it's a lot of fun. On their website, they have a Learn tab, and under that you'll find links to Geocaching 101, where they teach you all about geocaching, all the nuances. Lots of videos there for you to watch and learn about it. They also have a link and a whole area dedicated to geocaching and education. So this is the part that ties in with our education focus show. So you can introduce students to the game. You can watch some screencasts and learn more about how to make those ties to education. I think they may even have some guidelines for creating geocaching events. So maybe we actually did this once for a church picnic. We went and found geocaches in the area just for a church event. So lots of different flavors that might be good for your school or ministry efforts. It's a lot of fun. And then just one more link I'll include in the show notes to a podcast. It's called Podcacher, and they've been around longer than us, Martin. I think they've been podcasting since about 2005, and so wow. Pretty long history here. And they teach you all about it. They interview geocachers. They have a really fun show. It's very family friendly. The couple that does it, they're out in California, Sunny and Sandy, and their son Sean. They travel all over to big geocaching events and meet people. And I follow them on Facebook too. And they're just always very good advocates for the game and lots of fun nuances that you can include in it. So. Great way to get off the couch and get out there and find some really neat locations. We've seen a lot of places we would have never visited without the fact that there were geocaches there. And I just highly recommend it. It's a fun little sport to be involved in. So.
Very cool. Geocaching really was popular, you know, like you say, about 6, 7, 8 years ago. But you know, maybe it's just as popular now. We just don't see it. It's kind of a given, but it's probably more fun than ever because of the advent of smartphones, where you're not just dealing with you know, web pages that you're printing off in your little, you know, cryptic GPS. You've got a more interactive experience right on your smartphone, and lots of different apps out there now. So if you haven't done it in a while, it's probably worth a second look, especially for classroom activities.
Definitely, fun stuff.
All right, my pick of the week. Seems like this time of year is new phone launch. Everything's coming out pretty quickly, and a lot of different apps coming out now. So let me just quickly share my screen. And a phone that came out last year is actually my pick, the Nexus 6, made by Motorola. It is available. The price has been reduced, so the price right now is $350. It started out as a $650 phone last year when it was released. So in the space of a year, it's dropped to $350 because of the release of some of these new phones that are out. So there's now a Nexus 6P that was just launched. So this is last year's model. But if you are interested in some of these larger format phones, this is actually a very big one. So you'd have to kind of be up for, you know, a 6-inch screen on a phone, which this one is. You can get it at a pretty sweet price at this point. A lot of the premium phones right now are twice that. So if you're talking about the like the iPhone, for instance, if you're looking at the larger model, you are in the $800 range. So something less than half of that price is actually a very good deal if you're interested in these kinds of phones. It's a very powerful phone, beautiful screen, great speakers, pretty good battery life, pretty good camera. I mean, it's actually a very good value if you want to move into that kind of larger screen. So don't always look at the latest and greatest, but maybe look at last year's model as an example, and it may meet, you know, may meet your needs as well. So Nexus 6 from Motorola. Don't go to Motorola's site. They still have it at a higher price. Go to Amazon, and you can get the $349 price.
Great deal.
One of those. I was in the market for a new phone recently, and I was looking at those, and it was a little cost prohibitive for me. Mm-hmm. But have you used a Nexus 6?
Yeah, got it right here.
Okay.
And I would say it's not for somebody with really small hands. It's pretty wide, and it's wider than any other phone I've ever had. But that kind of comes in handy for you know, video and, you know, different media kinds of things that you would do with it. Definitely two-handed, you know, operation. But to be honest, the iPhone Plus is the same way. You know, a lot of these are really not one-handed phones. So, but nice and thin. It looks nice. It's pretty durable. I think the phone you have, Jason, was probably in that price range as well. But yours was hard to get too, wasn't it?
Well, actually, I got last year's OnePlus model, the OnePlus One. Mm-hmm. And mine was only $299.
Yeah.
That
was kind of their niche, that the, you know, mm-hmm. premium phone at, you know, these lower prices, but they weren't. You had to go through an invitation, you know, sometimes to get these, and now they've kind of opened it up a little bit. But
just for last year's model, for the one this year, I had an invitation to purchase a OnePlus 2, but I had already had this one in my grubby little hands by that point, mm-hmm. so. I'm happy with it though.
Good.
Yeah. And is that one a bigger format as well?
This one's a 5. What is it? I think 5.2, 5.5. So okay. I've got man hands. So I can use it one-handed, you know, most of the time. But, you know, again, just like anybody else, you know, even my wife, you know, she's got a little Motorola phone, but she'll, you know, do her one finger texting kind of a thing, and I, you know, mm-hmm. it's one hand, you know, it's two-handed operation pretty much anywhere.
Yeah, so. I've always been a big fan of Motorola phones. I think they just feel nice, and they're pretty durable, and even just the software that's on them is kind of nice as well. A little bit more than just kind of the average phone with. You can talk. You know, you don't have to turn it on to do voice activation, and it's got some nice driving features and those kinds of things. So. Lots of opportunities, and the, you know, the prices are getting better. So if you're looking to kind of upgrade from that freebie you got or whatever, and you want to go with a bigger screen size, this might not be a bad choice. So
not to belabor the point or anything. Go ahead, Sally.
No, I was just gonna say I giggled at the bigger screen size. It's the age that makes that appealing to me. My eyes seem to like the bigger screen size. That's all.
I'd agree. What, Jason? What are you gonna say?
Well, I was going to say, since you have a Nexus 6, are you looking at Project Fi at all?
I looked at that, and the Nexus 6 will work with mm-hmm. Project Fi. For those of you that don't know, Project Fi is basically a Google wireless service, like Verizon, like AT&T has. You have the ability to sign up for this service, and what it is you subscribe. Jason's got it there on the screen, and Google has negotiated a relationship with Sprint and T-Mobile, so whichever is going to be the strongest signal, it's going to use that signal, and it's also going to use Wi-Fi for calling. So if you're in Wi-Fi, it won't use either of those, it'll use the local Wi-Fi for calling. You get unlimited, as far as I know, you get unlimited talk and text, and then you pay $10 per gigabyte. So when you sign up, you say, well, I want the 2-gigabyte plan. So it's 20, actually, I think it's, isn't it 20 bucks? I don't have it in front of me. Yeah, 20 bucks a month, 20 bucks a month flat, and then 10 bucks per gigabyte. what's kind of cool is you say, well, I want 3 gigabytes, so you got your $50 plus taxes or whatever. So that's actually a pretty reasonable price. But if you don't use your 3 gigabytes, they'll rebate you the money. It'll go back into your account, so you only pay what you use. So that's very attractive, and you can terminate at any time. But there's only a few phones that'll work with it. The Nexus 6 is one. And then the two new phones that Google just launched recently, the Nexus 5X and the Nexus 6P, also work with Google Fi. I'm sure there'll be more phones as we go along. But sounds pretty attractive, and the reviews have been pretty positive. First of all, the flexibility of the plan, coverage not too bad. I mean, you get similar speeds. I think you also get some good international rates that come along with that as well. I heard the speeds aren't real great, but at least you don't have to kind of go to an international plan and pay these exorbitant rates. You just take your phone and you go. So if you do international traveling, Google Fi might be something that you would be interested in. You have to kind of sign up, and now it's pretty easy. I had to get on a list, and I finally got an invite, although I don't know that I'm going to take advantage of it. But it sounds like a worthwhile program. So
good. All kinds question. Of smartphone knowledge being shared here. So.
Yeah,
very good.
We probably ought to skitter along here to our ministry resources section before we forget about it. Some good stuff here, too.
Definitely. We want to share today the Time of Grace blog. So many of you are familiar with Time of Grace Ministry. It's out of Grace Downtown, Milwaukee, with Pastor Mark Jeske.
Not and they Grace have a, Downtown, St. Marcus.
Sorry, I said it wrong. St. Marcus in Milwaukee with Pastor Mark Jeske, and they have an excellent web presence where they have their videos and things available, but they also have a really awesome blog, and blogging on all different topics here, and perhaps just something you want to begin to read up on, things that they're posting here, but also something that might be good for sharing, through social media channels or whatever. They certainly are good discussion topics. They often are very timely with events going on in the world and things like that. So a Christian / Wells perspective on different topics, and I think very, very well done. Martin, are you a reader of the blog?
I subscribe, yeah, and there have been a number of articles that have come across my feed reader that have been very interesting, well-written, very thoughtful, a number of authors that write for it. So, yeah, that's why we made it a ministry resource. There's good stuff there, so give it a shot. We'll clue the link to it in the show notes.
Mm-hmm. And that means it's time for a video, right?
That means it's time for a YouTube video.
That's right. We always end each show with a link to a YouTube video, and this being the week of Reformation, the 498th anniversary of Martin Luther nailing those 95 theses to the church door in Wittenberg. We have A Mighty Fortress Is Our God sung by Koine with a really awesome video to go along with it, and we will be embedding that on our show notes page at wellstech.wells.net. So head on over to Wells Tech and check out A Mighty Fortress from Koine and enjoy your Reformation celebration.
Absolutely. Next week, I'll be sharing some things that I'm going to share with the good teachers of Wisconsin at the Wisconsin Lutheran State Teachers Conference. I'm doing, being a copycat a little bit, Jason did this for Wells Tech Conference, flip classroom technology. So I'm not focusing on kind of the process or the methodology of a flipped classroom, but simply what kind of cool gear or software or sites you can use to flip a classroom. And there's all kinds of cool stuff. In fact, just to whet your appetite, I'm at a really cool pick of the week next week that really is a nice tool to use in a flipped classroom environment. So tune in next week for that little review. But building the technology behind flipped learning or flipped classroom is what we will be talking about next week. So not just for schools. I think there's flipped classroom opportunities in all kinds of scenarios, including catechism, confirmation class, even Bible information class, those kinds of things. So that's what we're going to talk about next week.
And blessings on your time with those good teachers. I'm sure they'll appreciate your efforts.
Looking forward to it. Always do. It's always a good time. I need to thank Jason, as usual. You brought your A-game and the sunshine, as usual, Jason. Thank you for your time, and we look forward to the time where we can welcome you back again. Sally, thank you for all you do, and blessings to all you listeners and viewers. We hope you will tune in next week. Blessings on your work in His service. Bye-bye.
Bye.